Time for the NLA Hamsnet. This is Terry from Colorado. My call sign's KI0RE, but you don't have to have a call sign yet. You can talk anytime, though a few of the people on here do. This net is held every week on Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and we talk about things that concern the NLA and ham radio. Mostly I've been teaching a course, and I've been going through the ARRL Ham Radio License Manual, 3rd edition, Level 1 Technician. You're welcome to join in, and you're also welcome to try and get your ham's license. My number's available on the little announcement that Jan sends out, but you can look me up there with KI0RE2 and find me also. So, without further ado, we've been in the book, and we're on page 7-9. Anyone who wants to turn to that page is welcome to. Do we have any questions or comments or criticisms or suggestions that have been held over and somebody wants to let me know and make a comment, suggestion, criticism, or question? Please call now.
None for me.
Okay, we'll assume there are none. I didn't hear anything. If you forgot to unmute or something like that, please try again in a few minutes. I'm willing to stop my little lecture and talk at any time, anywhere about anything. So, last time we left off at 7.2, working with the FCC. The FCC in recent years has gone online. So a lot of this is talking about using the website. People already know how to use websites, but the FCC was written by the government. So please be careful. You may need a little help to register for your online or make simple changes or renew your license. I renewed my license last time online. It was easy, quick, and simple, and I enjoyed doing it. To register, you just click on the register button and go through the questions, and then when you turn the page on 7-10, there's even more. Using your FRN. FRN, I forget what it stands for. I'm sure it told on the page before. An FRN is a federal registration number, and that's a way that you can use that number to register things and put it on paper without having to use your call sign, because people can look up your call sign and figure out something about you, where you live, and that kind of thing. So the FRN is used to I'm sorry. Did somebody say something?
No, I'm sorry. I was just commenting on something. Didn't mean to interrupt. I'll mute out.
Okay. Thank you, Jan. You must use it on paper forms. Let's see, your key to unlocking. You must use the FRN on your paper forms. At one time, it was just your Social Security number could double as an FRN. But people got upset about that because people didn't want their Social Security number being sent all around in the mail, et cetera, et cetera. The FCC Form 605 is the one that's used for almost every action that needs to be done concerning ham radio. Having an FRN means you don't have to use Social Security number, like I was saying, when filling forms. When you register, you receive a letter that contains your FRN and a starting password, and that's the weird thing. They don't send it over. It doesn't tell you, okay, your FRN is. They make a letter up and tell you what your password is and then send you the letter by mail. Kind of, like I say, it's a government program. So you use that, you log in the FRS, and you can start doing anything. And then 7.3 is a little more interesting topic. I'm going to leave that up there if there's no questions. If you do have a questions, please pipe up, and I'll keep talking until somebody does. There's a little bit, 7.3 on page 7-10 is bans and privileges. And the frequencies and modes and methods that hams are allowed to use are all known to the rules and regulations as privileges. Now, they call them privileges because you kind of have to coordinate this stuff because it can go anywhere. You once you say something and you transmit, it goes as far as that antenna will take it, as far as that power will take it. So they try to coordinate with the other countries in the world, and these pretty much settle down, and that's where they stay. What gives the FCC authority to grant privileges in the Communications Act is the Communication Act of 1934. What then grants these privileges to you is your license. By signing Form 605 and applying for a license, you agree to be bound by the FCC rules, and that means staying within the privileges of your license. Now, of course, we've discussed, in an emergency, you do what you need to do to save life and limb and property. Frequency privileges. This is most probably the most interesting and important, to me at least, chart in the book. And it's referencing figure 7.4 on page 7-11. And I would describe it to you. I'll describe it to you just a little bit. But you may have seen a chart like this. And it essentially cuts up the RF spectrum in different frequencies. See, it starts at about 1,000 meters or 300 kilohertz, which is medium frequencies, and goes up, decreasing wavelength and increasing frequency. And everywhere there's a little black band, I think it's black, yeah, that's an amateur radio service. And the thing that we've been talking about is the 2-meter band, 144 to 148, and the UHF band from 420 to 450 megahertz, which is 70 centimeter band. So 2 meters and 144 to 148, they're saying the same thing. You can say the whole band by saying 2-meter band, and you can say the whole UHF band by saying 70 centimeters. So 2 meters is VHF, 70 centimeters is UHF. But there's also another band in between. There's one at 1.25 meters, 222 megahertz to 225. And that is used by several people. There's some places where that's the main band that's used. But you can see TV channels in here, and there's some grayed-out area. They took away a lot of the particulars of what's on this this graph. I have somewhere in one of the boxes in my storeroom is a chart, and it's a color chart, and you can get one. I got mine from ICOM, and various companies make them. And it shows this same whole band, but they go ahead and figure in, and this is for land mobile communications, and this is for commercial communications, and this is for something else, and the government reserves this band here. And you see that, and it's very interesting to go and see how the band is sliced up so that everybody gets to the little piece they need. And you look at this figure on page 7-11, and those black bands are spread out. Well, that's the idea. You kind of get hams get a spot on each of the different bands and the different frequencies. So there's one in the third. We talked about a 2-meter band, a 1.25 meter band. Well, there's also the 6-meter band down around 50 megahertz. And it goes down from there all the way to the lowest one, 160 meters, and that's 1,800 kilohertz on up to 2,000 kilohertz. So that's right above the regular AM band. And it goes up. Let's see, there's one at 33 centimeters, which is about 902 megahertz, 23 centimeters, 1,240 megahertz. 13 centimeters, 2,300 megahertz, which is 2.3 gig. 12 centimeters, and then we're in the microwave by this time. And there's bands allocated up at 24 gig. And there's another one up about 241 to 250 gig. Amazing. That is vibrating really, really fast. And this spectrum, oh, there's a nice chart at the bottom that shows how this radio fits into all different frequencies. And it gets up into infrared and visible light and ultraviolet, and et cetera. But it talks about MF, HF, VHF, UHF, SHF, which is super high frequency, and EF, EHF, extremely high frequency. Lots and lots of information in this chart, and I recommend it. If at any time you have a question about, am I operating where I should be? That's a good place to go. The next page, 7-12, has table 7.2 and table 7.3, and it shows some breakdowns of those bands, some of the bands that I mentioned and some that I forgot to mention or didn't mention, in writing. That's a little bit better for memorizing where the bands are, because you will have to know some of the edges of these bands, especially the more popular ones. I like to always go down to the, 40 meters? I think it's 40 meters down around 7 megahertz. I like that one. That's great for code, but it also will reach all the way around the world, so you got to be careful. Today, there are literally hundreds of bands and dozens of different types of radio spectrum users. The frequency privileges granted to the various services are called allocations. In other words, the government wants to ensure that you recognize this as a privilege and that they allocate you a frequency that you can use. And it goes on and it talks about 7.2 and the frequencies and how you figure it out. You can turn wavelength into frequency and frequency into wavelength. And it just all depends on what you're using as the speed of light. And then you can shortcut that by taking some zeros off the speed of light. If I had a board here, I would show you. But there's a formula you can use that says the frequency in megahertz equals 300 divided by the wavelength in meters, or the wavelength. It writes it twice there. I don't know why. 300, so the wavelength in meters might equal 300 over the frequency in megahertz. And that makes it easy to convert without having to figure out whether you're talking about kilohertz and megahertz. 300, by the way, here, it actually represents 3 times 10 to the 8th meters per second, which is the speed of light. You can also do it with, it's taken some zeros off because we're working in megahertz and meters instead of feet and inches and that kind of thing. It says right here, the book says, you should memorize the frequencies for the most common bands used by technicians. 6 meters is 50 to 54. 2 meters, 144 to 148. And 70 centimeters, 420 to 450. Those you really need to do. Hams keep a chart of their privileges handy, since not many of us have every one of these memorized. To help you remember your privileges, copy the information onto a piece of paper and tape it to your car or near your computer. I was carrying kids around a lot at a time. And when I was getting my ham license for the first time, and I would bring the book along and have a bookmark in it, and I would have the kids open it up and quiz me on, if they could give me a frequency, I'd tell them what meter band it was, what the wavelength was. If they give me a wavelength, I'd tell them the frequency bounds of that particular band. worked pretty well, and I memorized a lot of stuff that way. The HF privileges for technician in Table 7.3, they've opened that up quite a bit. That's almost what a general license was allowed in the past. So that you've got a lot more than what I thought. I'd forgotten they had done that. A full-page chart of technician privileges provided in this book's website and in Chapter 1, depending on solar activity, the 10-meter band can provide contacts worldwide, and you can try out RTTY and other HF data modes. And let's see, 40 meters is 7.025 to 7.125 CW only. Oh, and that's the thing. They limit you to continuous wave, CW, Morse code, on all those bands. You can't use the voice side, except on, let's see, there's a small allocation on 10 meters, 28.3 megahertz to 28.5 megahertz, which you can do CW and single sideband. So that's a good thing. I wasn't as far off as I thought it was. I didn't know they were allowing technicians to do code down there, those bands anymore. Emission privileges. Now, we've talked about how to change a frequency to a wavelength to a frequency, and how a particular wavelength represents the amateur band in that wavelength, and how the frequencies are the limits. There's limits to each frequency. Now they're going to talk about emissions. Within most of the ham bands, additional restrictions are made by mode or emission type. Emission is the formal name for any radio signal from a transmitter. Just as a frequency privilege is permissions to use a specific frequency, an emission privilege is permission to communicate using a particular mode, such as phone, which is talking, CW, Morse code, data, or image. Table 7.4 lists the modes. And you know what? I haven't paid attention to those in a long time, because most where I spend my time is on phone, speech or voice communications. But there's a list on table 7.4 of what they are, page 7-13. CW is Morse code telegraphy. Data is computer-to-computer communication modes, usually called digital modes. Image, television, fast scan, slow scan, and facsimile or fax. MCW, tone modulated CW, Morse code generated by keying an audio tone. I could explain a bunch more, but I'm not going to do it right here. Phone is speech or voice communications. Pulse is communications using a sequence of pulses whose characteristics are modulated in order to carry information. RTTY or RADI, I've talked about this before, is narrowband direct printing telegraphy received by automatic equipment such as a computer or teleprinter. SS, spread spectrum, communications in which the signal is spread out over a wide band of frequencies. And in test, transmissions containing no information. I can just say that the spread spectrum is one of the things that your telephone uses and has used for quite a while, though you might not know that. And they use a set of frequencies, and they have a hop sequence that they use. And that's pretty slick, and it actually reduces the noise floor when you do that. And I'm going to go on. I'm on page 7.5, and there's another chart here. I'm on page 7-14, table 7.5, and it breaks down some of these ham bands to show you what you're allowed to do. And the one that sticks out the most is like 2 meters, from 144 megahertz to 144.1 megahertz. It's CW only. So if you're going to transmit in that area, better be on Morse code, not anything else. Your emission should be Morse code, and then it goes down through other places that you're allowed to do and do different things. That 40 meter band. Yeah, there's 7 to 7.025, and that's you can do just about anything there, but 7.025 to 7.125, that's Morse code only. I remember I used to like to get up just a little above 7.125 and do Morse code, and I've talked to a lot of people that way. We can go on. Power limits, that's the next thing that they address. So we've addressed band plans and which bands are allocated to the ham radio service. We've talked about how you can translate band, the wavelengths, to a particular set of frequencies that also represent that ham band. We've talked about emissions. Now we're going to talk about power limits. The maximum power an amateur is allowed to generate at the output of the transmitter or amplifier is 1,500 watts of peak envelope power, which is PEP. PEP is the average power during one RF cycle of the radio. So you take the high point and you take the low point and you average the difference together. At the very peak of a modulating waveform, such as for speech, for a CW signal, PEP is measured during the key down period in which the transmitter is on. FM is constant power mode, so it does not matter whether you are speaking or not. And that's just the characteristic of FM. I can explain that if anybody needs me to. Amateurs are expected to use the minimum power required to carry out the desired communications as long as it does not exceed the maximum power allowed. That doesn't mean you have to turn down the output power until you can just barely be heard. That's probably not the desired communications. What it means is that if you can carry on your intended communications with less power, you should do so. So if you're hitting a repeater and you've got it on high, just try real quick. Can you do it on medium? And if you can do it on medium, can you do it on low? Low doesn't sound very good. Medium sounds pretty good. So maybe you use a medium power level and to hit a particular repeater, and everybody can hear you. As you start getting further away, maybe you have to go back to using high. Maybe you get closer to people to the repeater, and you can go to the low setting on your radio. Transmitter output power is measured at the output of the last amplifier, whether internal to the transmitter or an external piece of equipment, at the input to the antenna feed line, not at the antenna or anywhere along the feed line. The limit of 1,500 watts is allowed nearly everywhere on the ham bands except on the following frequencies. And I didn't know this, so I'm going to read it real quick. Novice and technician licensees are limited to 200 watts PEP on HF bands. All amateurs are limited to 200 watts PEP on the 30-meter band. All amateurs are limited to 50 watts PEP on the 219 to 220 megahertz band. That's 1.25 meters, segment of the 1.25 meter band. Stations being operated as beacons are limited to 100 watts PEP, peak envelope power, if you need the reminder. Stations operating in the 70-centimeter band near certain military installations may be limited to 50 watts PEP or less. There are other restrictions for novice class licensees and for stations operating on the 60-meter band. There are still people that's all they have is a novice license. Just because they don't issue novice license anymore doesn't mean there aren't people out there that have novice license or advanced license. It's just that they're getting fewer and fewer because of attrition. I'll let you figure out how that works. Most amateurs rarely use or run more than a few hundred watts on the VHF, UHF. The HF radio I had would not do over 100 watts, and that was probably pushing it. It was probably operating around 90 to 95 watts most of the time, and I had a little thing and I could turn it down if I wanted to and work on just 5 watts, which is a lot of fun too. How far can you have a conversation when you only are using 5 watts? And there's a lot of guys that do that mode, and it's called QRP. If you look up the Q signals, QRP means low power. Or if you put a question mark on the end, it means, do I need to change my power? Or do I need to raise my power or lower my power? Um, Exceptions would be while pursuing very weak signal methods such as Earth-Moon-Earth, EME, or tropospheric propagation where high power is required to establish and maintain contact. High power levels of these frequencies. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to comment a little earlier, Terry, about the band allocations. When I started studying for my license, and then I went and looked at what you could use in terms of frequency allocations for just the technicians, I decided right then and there that to be really useful, you needed more than a technician's license. So, and then I looked at the next up and finally decided, well, you might as well go all the way and get the extra license, then you're covered with everything that's legally allowed, you know? And I think if we had more people that were willing to do that, we might have more luck in trying to get a ham net going. Over.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. That's what we'd like to do, is establish a ham radio net. Instead of talking here every week, we could talk up there and discuss NLA business. And the nice thing about that is if we could establish that, then we would have a backup way in case the phone systems were down. We'd have a backup way of communicating with somebody else beyond just our local area. And sometimes that's important to kind of coordinate. Primary and secondary allocations. Thank you very much, Jen. It would be nice if every type of radio user had exclusive access to their allocation. Well, you don't. Many amateur bands are exclusively allocated to hams worldwide because spectrum is scarce and many services have valid needs for radio communications. Occasionally, two services receive shared allocations, including some of the amateur bands. When this happens, one group is generally given priority and they are called the primary allocation. Groups that have access to spectrum on a lower priority receive secondary allocations. The groups that receive the allocations are primary and secondary services. The primary service is protected from harmful interference by signals from a secondary service, and that's the key. That's why they're doing this. If you are on a ham band that is it's a secondary allocation for ham radio, amateur radio service, you don't want to interfere with anybody that's on the primary allocation. And the primary allocation, by the same token, on a different band, the primary allocation might be the amateur radio service. And in that case, the whatever service is using the band, if they interfere with you, then you kind of need to talk to them about it. I want you to realize something that, you know, you don't know what you're going to run up against. Be open-minded. Be courteous. I don't know how many wars have been started because somebody wasn't courteous to somebody else. Well, I'm the primary allocation, and you should get off. Well, the secondary allocation says, well, I'm conducting an emergency right now, and so I have priority. Well, you didn't tell me that. I think I blah, 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 blah. And he's using up bandwidth. He's using up time on the frequency. And he's probably not doing it right. So keep calm. The frequency is still out there, even after this time passes. And be courteous to the other station. The secondary service gains access to frequencies in the allocation with the understanding that it must not cause harmful interference. That's kind of what I was saying. Okay, let's go on. I think it has an example. For example, amateurs have a secondary allocation in the 70-centimeter band and must avoid interfering with radio location stations that have primary status. There you go. I didn't know that. By sharing the bands in this way, I'm up to page 7-16. Frequencies are available for more uses than if every frequency was exclusively to one service alone. Do I need to shut up for a second?
I don't think so.
Okay, I heard some squeal. call coming in. I don't care. That's what it was. There is the line A up by the Canadian border where Canada has first use from 420 to 430 megahertz. So they don't want you above line A to even use the ham radio band between 420 and 430 megahertz. If you live up north, please find out about that and obey the law. And then there's some shortwave. Different governments use shortwave. If you tune through the shortwaves, oftentimes you go into the ham bands, and there will be a station sitting right in the smack dab middle of where you want to transmit. But it's a commercial radio station in Brazil that's beaming to the entire world on 100,000 watts or something. You just kind of got to live with it. Sorry about that. Part 97.303 lists all the frequency sharing requirements for U.S. hams and is available at the ARRL website. It is worth familiarizing yourself, especially when you're working inside of a single band. Take the time, go up there, check, and be aware of it. The next heading is band plans. And that's kind of that's a lot of the ARRL and just hams in general, kind of getting together and saying, well, we don't want these digital communications coming across a repeater, for instance. Let's allocate just a slice down here and let the digital repeaters stay down there, and that helps everybody. And so there's band plans that have been made, and a good place for those is the ARRL. They are in the front of the ARRL repeater directory. You can find the band plans as they were when it was published, and they break it down very well. And I could go over that, but it's a lot of minutia that you really only need to check when you're going to be using that frequency. So realize that they're there. Go back and check the different questions and see what they're looking for. Repeater coordination. So the next thing about band plans is repeater coordination. And usually there's somebody that is a repeater coordinator for the state, and they kind of control who is allowed to use what repeater where. That way you can have two repeaters that are actually operating pretty close together, but they don't interfere with each other because they're using particular tones. They resolve the repeaters. So maybe up in the northwest corner of Colorado and in the southeast corner of Colorado, there's two different repeaters, but they're on the same frequency with the same side tone. Well, they can operate that way because it's 300-400 miles between them. So there's no sense in that. But what you get is the person who is here and 10 miles away, and they want to use the same frequency. You got to talk to your repeater coordinator for the state and find out what needs to be done. And you want to use coordinated repeaters because then you know you're not going to get a lot of interference. All right, I think that's a good place to stop. 7.4 International Rules on page 7-17. Do I have any questions, suggestions, criticisms, or advice? Please call now. Hearing none, I'm going to close the net. This has been the NLA Hams Net. It's every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We talk about things NLA-ish and hamish. And my name is Terry from Colorado, and I am K-I-0-R-E. You can look me up, and you can find out what my last name is. Good luck. And I appreciate all the participation tonight. I appreciate everyone that came and just listened, and I hope that this does you some good. I encourage you to get in touch with a local ham club, and you'll really start learning a lot faster than what I'm doing here. And with that, I'm going to announce that the net is now closed. Thank you.